our lovely listeners, welcome to yet again another day of knowing who is up to what with regards to creating positive change in their communities. Today's guest is actually one of my favorites. Her calmness and graceful nature at handling things can calm down the most violent and vibrant storms in life. Well, you might have heard about her. Daphne Chebesi. She is a junior fellow at Melton Foundation, studying business administration at Ashesi University based in Ghana. She's an advocate for SDG 4, quality education, and has great interest in peace building. That should give you an insight on why she is the brain behind Inspire for Peace. So Daphne, welcome to the roundtable, and I can't wait to know what's being served today. So to kick it off, why don't you give us a brief background on the bigger problem in Cameroon that you are trying to solve in the level that you can?
Hi, Clarice. Thank you so much for the amazing introduction. So a little background history on Cameroon. Cameroon was colonized by Britain and France. And upon colonization, France took 4 feet of Cameroon, while Britain took just 1 foot. That was because Britain was not really interested in having a large part of Cameroon. And fast forward to when Cameroon was about to gain, when English-speaking Cameroon was about to gain independence, they had the option to either join Nigeria or to join French-speaking Cameroon. So English-speaking Cameroon chose to join the French-speaking Cameroon, and that formed the Republic of Cameroon as we have it today. So because of the Anglophone minority, over the years, the Anglophones in Cameroon have felt like they are being marginalized. And that's because we are underrepresented in government, and many influential positions in society are rarely occupied by English-speaking Cameroonians. So Cameroonians have lived like this over the years without an issue. But in 2016, the teachers and lawyers took to the streets with a strike action to demand better working conditions. That is, teachers and lawyers from the English-speaking regions of Cameroon. And civilians saw this as an opportunity to also demand for better living conditions, because it's like they were tired of the marginalization that has been happening over the years, and they have been looking for an opportunity to speak up. So most civilians found this as an opportunity to speak up. So civilians took to the streets to also demand for better living conditions, but the government did not really yield to their demands. And so most of the leaders of the strike action, most of the Anglophone leaders of the strike action came together, and they decided to demand for a complete separation from the French-speaking region of Cameroon, or the French-speaking part of Cameroon. And this did not really please the government, so they sent in a lot of troops, a lot of army to the English-speaking regions to calm the situation. But for the past 4 years, it's really not been as we expected it to be, because the situation has not really been calm. It's been a lot of ceasefires, a lot of killing, a lot of ghost towns. And it's also important to note that when the strike action started, the leaders of the strike action in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon decided to bring schools to a halt, because they felt like that was going to cause the government to yield to their demands. But 4 years down the line, or 4.5 years down the line, over 80% of schools in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon have been closed down, and there's still no headways, and the situation keeps getting worse. People keep dying. And what's so sad about it is the fact that so many people out there, or so many people in the international community, have very little knowledge about the extent of damage that's been caused in Cameroon or in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon. The Norwegian Refugee Council has ranked the crisis in Cameroon as the most neglected displacement crisis, because it's really not something a lot of people talk about. And also because of this whole crisis, I think English-speaking Cameroon has had the longest internet shutdown in the history of internet shutdowns in Africa. I think it was about a 3-month period of complete internet shutdown in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon to prevent the flow of information to the outside world. So a lot of things have happened in these two regions over the past 4.5 years. But what's most saddening is like the impact, or the enormous negative impact it has had on education and the scars it's going to leave like for the generation of people who are dependent on education in these regions.
Oh no, that was really sad. My people, if you didn't know about the situation in Cameroon, now you know. Definitely moving on swiftly. So how has this bigger problem affected the access to education in Cameroon?
Okay, so like I said, about 80% of schools in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon have been closed down, and this has affected the education of over 800,000 primary school pupils and youth. And I think this statistic is from the UNICEF. And also a lot of families have had to move to safer regions to guarantee access to education for their children. And those who don't have the resources or the opportunity to move have to brave the odds to be able to attend school in these regions. Most of those from extreme rural communities cannot even go to school because the ceasefires or the battles fought in these regions are so extreme that if you're caught going to school, you're immediately killed or you're kidnapped or something bad is being done to you. So most people have had to move to like urban or suburban regions to go to school. And it's not even like they're going to school in the open. They have to do it in the hiding. It's rare to see students moving about in school uniforms or carrying school bags. Children have to, you know, hide before going to school, and teachers have to do the same. So the 20% of schools that are still open are doing so at their own risk. And the leftover pupils or students who are still attending the school are doing so at their own risk. I think just at the beginning or at the end of last year, a school was attacked in one of the French-speaking regions called the Southwestern region, and children were beheaded and they were cut into pieces just to like pass on a message that children are not supposed to be going to school at this time. And so it leaves us with the question, like, what's the future of generations to come if children cannot go to school today? How is the future going to look like 10 years down the line if children are not able to go to school today? So I think even if a lot of attention is not given to the crisis in Cameroon or in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon, because maybe it's just affecting two regions, the fact that a whole generation of students or a whole generation of children or a whole generation of young people cannot access education is a reason for people to have or to maybe to raise their voices and, you know, tell the world that something is happening here and this thing needs attention.
Wow, I just got chills. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, moving on swiftly. How did the Inspire for Peace come about? What is the end goal?
Okay, so when I was traveling to Ghana, I think in 2020 or the summer of 2020, I'm not sure, but just recently when I was moving back to school in Ghana, I at the bus station, when I was trying to get the bus to get to the capital city for my flight, I saw a lot of families or a lot of internally of families trying to move to the French-speaking regions, you know, most of them were actually running away for safety. And most of these families who are running for safety, like I said, come from the rural areas because these are the areas where the war is really extreme and a lot of people are losing their lives, their houses, and, you know, all of that. So a lot of them, I saw a lot of them at the bus station carrying beds, buckets, and everything, trying to move to the French regions or to safer regions so that their children can go to school, or some of them just for safety. And I was just wondering to myself, like, how do they survive in these regions? Because back at home or back at home in the villages or in the rural areas, most of them are farmers or petty traders. And, you know, they need to, they're able to farm and send the children to school and things like that. But right now they are moving, leaving behind their livelihoods. How are they going to fend for these children? And, you know, when you have to provide for shelter, clothing, food, education no longer becomes a priority because you're just trying to survive. So I thought to myself, if these people are literally just trying to survive, then who even thinks about, you know, education? Who even thinks about sending their children to school? So I felt like even those who might have the opportunity to send their children to school might face significant challenges sending them to school, because as much as the child is able to go to school, it doesn't guarantee that the child is happy staying in school, or the child is happy studying in school, or their mental state of being at school, or their mental state at school at that moment is the best. most of them who are able to even move to these regions and enroll their children in school don't have, these children don't have like the necessary resources to be in school. They don't have uniforms, they don't have school bags. So, you know, there is already that gap between them and, you know, children who are studying in these safer regions or who originally come from these safer regions. So what I really can't change the world, but what I did is I tried to focus on the part I feel like I have a control over or the part which I can change. So I thought to myself, primary education in government schools in Cameroon is really subsidized. So most of these children can afford primary education, even though their families are not really financially up to the task. They might be able to afford education, but do they have the resources to stay in school? Because just going to school is not enough. Do you have a pen to write? Do you have a school bag to put your books? You know, things like that. And having a school bag, pen, pencil, it's just like the basic necessities you need to be in school. So I thought maybe I start up a project to support the education of internally displaced primary school pupils who are going to school in safer regions, but might face challenges getting like resources to remain in school, just to guarantee that these children are comfortable in school, and this it reduces the gap between internally displaced pupils and just normal pupils. And also I targeted primary school pupils because, you know, they are very vulnerable. They can't fend for themselves. A secondary school child can, you know, go out there and do some minor job and get money, you know, to buy things, but the primary school child can't really do a lot. And, you know, primary education, people might look down on it because they feel like it's not really necessary as much as secondary or tertiary education is. But I think primary education sets the base for, you know, secondary and tertiary. And even if a child is not able to get secondary or tertiary education, the child should at least get a basic primary education to be able to express themselves in society or to be able to gain necessary skills in the future. So I started Inspire for Peace through the project and fundraising to provide school supplies like school bags, books, pens, pencils to internally displaced primary school pupils from the English-speaking regions of Cameroon who are studying in French regions or in CIFA regions. I targeted just one region, which is Douala. It's home to one of the largest population of internally displaced persons from the English-speaking regions. So through this project, I'm hoping that I can support the education of, you know, about 100 internally displaced primary school kids. And, you know, so that in the future, they'll understand that although understand how important it is to have an education, and who knows, they might be able to pay it forward in the communities in which they find themselves.
Very inspiring indeed. Keep up the good work, Daphne. We are all inspired. So why is this project important to you? Why does it particularly speak to you as Daphne Chebesi?
All right, so this project is important to me because education has made a whole difference in my life. It has helped me to sit or to belong in spaces where I might never have belonged if I, you know, did not go to school. So I feel like it's my place to reach back and make sure that others get the kind of opportunities I got. And it's impossible to make such bold steps if they are not able to just get even a basic primary education. That's why it's so important to me.
Oh, yeah, we just can't agree more. Thank you for sharing that. So why focus on school supplies? Why not any other way?
Okay, so like I said, internally displaced families from the English-speaking regions who like have had to move to French-speaking regions might just be focused on survival. Most of them might just want to, you know, afford food, water, shelter, and clothing, and education might not really be a priority. And even in circumstances where the children go to school, they might not be able to access the resources they need to be in school. So I focused on providing school supplies because, first of all, it's helping to, you know, make sure these children have access to the resources that they may need to be in school. Most non-governmental organizations also focus a lot on providing immediate relief for such families. And this immediate relief comes also in the form of food, clothing, shelter, healthcare. Most of them don't really focus a lot of attention on education. So I feel like if I come to such a community, it's my place to also, you know, look at the part which is neglected and, you know, do something about that. And the potential returns on education are so high that we don't have to ignore it today. And potential damage that may be caused to the lives of these children if they don't go to school today is also very high. So I think a lot of focus is not really placed on providing or maybe enabling access to education for such pupils. Many of them might end up dropping out. So giving them a school bag, giving them a pen and a pencil helps to, first of all, reduce the gap between, or maybe bridge the resource gap between them and just normal school pupils when they get to school. It's also motivation for their parents to ensure that they go to school. If you do not have intentions of being serious with your child's education and someone gives them a school bag, gives them books, gives them pens and pencils, it's a sign that that person is interested in their future, is interested in their education, and is willing to invest in them. And also, it's also like a sign of hope to these pupils that someone is out there who is concerned about your future, and it gives them some form of internal motivation or internal drive to want to go to school. And the last thing is also these school supplies, or the focus on education, or the focus on providing school supplies, is a message to the world that education is currently at risk in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon. When you just give up maybe food shelter, or maybe bathing, clothing and all of that, people might just feel like it's just a normal crisis. But just the fact that you're giving a school back, it sends like a message that, you know, this crisis has some impact on education. And if it has had like the most negative impact on education, then education needs to be given a little priority when providing relief for people from the English-speaking regions of Cameroon. So for me, it's like a sign of hope to these children that someone is interested and invested in their future. And it's also a message to the world that education is currently at risk in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon.
Wow, yeah, I am with you on that. Education is very important, and its access should always be part of people's priorities. So we have spoken about a number of things. In a sentence or two, what is one thing that you want our listeners to always remember?
Okay, so one thing I want them to remember, the tagline of this project is "It Takes a Village." I would say it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to educate a child. I cannot do it on my own. That's why I'm fundraising. That's why I'm asking for support. So I feel like all hands need to be on deck to make sure that, you know, children from English-speaking regions of Cameroon have their right to basic primary education. All hands need to be on deck to make sure that children from any part of the world have access to basic primary education. I think in the words of, you know, Malala, like, never in history again should a child be shot because they were going to school. I think history continues to repeat itself, but maybe this is the time for us all to maybe wake up and realize that the future of so many children is at risk at the moment because education is used as a weapon to fight wars.
Yep, I couldn't have put it any better. Well said. Thank you so much, Daphne, for showing up on the show. It's always inspiring to hear from you, and I am sure our listeners feel the same way. We have learned a lot about Cameroon as well as the work you're doing to with Inspire for Peace. Keep it up, girl. You got this.
Thank you.
For our closing remarks, I would just want you to know that there's a fundraising going on to support Inspire for Peace. The link to the donation has been shared below. Kindly check it out. Your donations will go a long way to bring the hope of a better future for to so many internally displaced primary school students in Cameroon. It is also a sign to these pupils that in a world filled with so much uncertainty, you are certain that education can guarantee them a better future. You can also help by sharing the fundraiser with friends, family, colleagues, or those within your network and encouraging them to donate. Thank you in advance for donating and for sharing. I'm still your lovely host, Clarice Nadini. Thank you for your time.